I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies, no, actually cloudy skies over West London, possibly because Todd Boehly is stepping back. We'll be getting into that. We'll be getting into the serious events in Spain with the racism. Tebas apologizing. We'll see if that actually leads to concrete action. We'll be talking about Brighton, the Seagulls flying into the Europa League. How about that? But let's start with the Coppa Italia, because Inter come back against Fiorentina in the final. And Jules, Lautaro steals the show, second goal, I thought, especially special.
Amazing goal.
In some ways, given the way Fiorentina play, given the fact that they're so open, they're so attacking, Italiano, you know, clearly an early Pep disciple in terms of wanting the ball, demanding the ball. Is this foreshadowed in any way how Inter might approach Istanbul?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are maybe you can find similarities between the way Fiorentina play and Manchester City, although City are a much better team, of course, and they certainly defend better.
There's a slight gap of quality.
Yeah, and maybe of not so naive maybe than Fiorentina in some aspect of the game. But Fiorentina played well and they got the ball, they played with the ball, they created a lot of problems for Inter in the start of the game, certainly when they scored a goal, and it's a lovely goal. And then especially towards maybe the last half hour or 20 minutes where Jovic really should have scored one, maybe even two. But in between, we saw a very resilient, clinical Inter, very well-organized Inter again, that I think we will see exactly in the final against City.
Yeah, I'm gonna, you said there, the in-between part, the fact that they got back into the game, I can give, you give Inter rightly credit for that.
Yeah.
The last 30 minutes.
What happened?
Honestly, this is what would worry me if I were Simone Inzaghi.
Yeah,
I agree. You know what? Look, City are heavy favorites for the final. But you can see a scenario where Inter find themselves in the lead. It's not impossible.
No, yeah.
But then if that last 25, 30 minutes, you suffer the way you did. You can't keep the ball further away from your goal for extended stretches, you're going to run into a serious, serious problem against Manchester City because, hey, guess what? It's not Jovic up front. It's Erling Braut Haaland.
Yeah, no, you're right. And to be fair, we've seen Inter controlling games well, especially against Milan, for example, in the Champions League semi-final. But we also know that Inzaghi likes to pre-plan his substitutions. Mm-hmm. And then maybe sometimes not react enough to what's happening in the game because the plan is already in place and he's programmed everything. Where I thought some of these substitutions, I mean, the way he managed that game yesterday when they were really under pressure, and they should not have been. I know Fiorentina are a good team, but Inter being 2-1 up should have been more in control of the last 20-30 minutes than what they were under so much pressure. And I don't think he really addressed it and responded to it, which, again, like if that happens against City, could be a big problem.
It's an interesting one because when we talk about sort of pragmatic approaches, right? You talk about reacting to the opposition. Mm-hmm. It's always a choice a manager makes. And generally, the rule of thumb is if you're stronger than the opposition, you make them react to you and the other way around. That's the way it's kind of been historically. Inter are a more talented team than Fiorentina. But the fact is Fiorentina weren't going to react to the way Inter play. Fiorentina were going to play their game.
Yeah,
they were going to take chances.
Yeah.
And they were going to. And I kind of feel like you have to be able to manage that. You have to be able to kill that off a little bit. On the substitution, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? You knew what he was going to do. Boom, Gagliardini and Lukaku coming on.
Exactly.
First of all, Gagliardini, maybe he wanted him to atone for his stupid red card at the weekend. But whatever, you know, he's going to be suspended in the league. Fine. But the Lukaku for Dzeko thing, Dzeko not happy.
No,
and I'm
not
wondering,
at all.
We saw Mancini. Freudian lapse. We saw Simone Inzaghi sit there and kind of like stand in front of Lukaku of Dzeko and explain why the substitution, blah blah blah. It's not good optics.
No. And again, like, I'm not really sure it was the right substitution to make at that time either. And Lukaku has been very good coming off the bench for them, for sure. There's no problem. And his relationship with Lautaro is great. We know that. We've known that from before, before he left and come back. So, okay, I get that, all of that. But I'm not sure it's the right message sent to Dzeko to start with, who you would expect him to start in the final. This is the team that's going to start unless of course, Mkhitaryan comes back and De Bruyne goes back on the bench. You've got the team there with Onana in goal, of course, and now Handanovic. But I just don't know. I mean, they won it, and maybe they have that know-how because they win finals. Yeah. That's what they do. But you're right. A few things to be worried about.
All right, Jules, I want to bring up the subject of Lautaro Martinez because in this Inter team, he's been on fire, really, the last 6 months. Mm. That second goal, and you can do the Techers breakdown on this one, because what strikes me is the angle at which the ball comes, to see the ball coming in, to have the coordination to get your shot off so quickly. And it's not difficult technically. Sorry, it's not easy technically to get that shot off. I don't think there's many strikers in the world who can technically even do that.
And I've been very impressed by his finishing, to be fair, in the last 6 months since he returned from the World Cup, because I think before we could easily have said that talent was not an issue at all, but at times maybe the finishing let him down, and we certainly saw that with Argentina a bit, hence why he lost his place in the team. There were other reasons as well why Alvarez went ahead of him for Scaloni, but also I felt at times, but he's become so clinical, and he was in the final on Wednesday night too, that second goal, even the first goal, but the first goal is more of a goal that you expect him to score, really. Right. The second one is harder, you're right. 26th and 27th goal of the season, which again is back-to-back seasons with over 25 goals in all competitions, which is impressive. And yes, of course, he plays with another striker, which I think probably helps him than if he was on his own up front.
But also means he's not the main offensive terminus, which probably hurts his goal total.
Yeah, because he has to share, right, with a Dzeko, with a Lukaku, with whoever plays next to him, Joaquin Correa, whatever. I really think that people undervalue him. And I don't really know why. I think if I was a top club right now, whether I play with only one up front or two, I would go for him. Really, like for all the clubs who are looking for strikers, because I think he's that fantastic, and he's still young, and there's still room for improvement, and he's strong physically, and he can hold the ball up. He can do anything, really.
I mean, I think a year ago they were asking 100 million for him, and I think that put people off. And then I think the World Cup also psychologically is going to put people off. And what I would say about the World Cup is, it's one or two games. I mean, Erling, if you took Erling Haaland's two worst games of the season, and you know, what was it, a couple of weeks ago he missed a hat trick of chances and stuff like that. If you play two games, if you don't see him regularly, right? Which if you play for Inter, it's not like playing for Barcelona or Real Madrid or playing in the Premier League. If you have a couple games like that in, you know, Norway's opening two games of the World Cup, and then Sørloth comes in for him,
I
think you have to look past that. It is interesting to me how he showed, you know, he had the guts to go and the wherewithal and the will to go and turn it around. Hmm? And I think that says a lot for him.
But there's a legitimate question about, can he play on his own up front? So if he comes to United, for example, who are looking for a striker, they decide to sign him, 80 million, whatever. Can he play on his own up front for United? Can he play on his own up front for Chelsea? Can he play on his own up front for Bayern Munich? I know it depends.
Can he play on his own up front for Argentina, right?
Yeah.
Which was effectively what he was called to do.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think is a fair question. I think he can. He might need a bit of time to adapt. It depends as well in what team. If it's a counter-attacking team, if it's a team with a lot of possession, I would think that he would score a lot of goals in Haaland's place in that City team, for example, or for Arsenal. And I'm sure for Chelsea, and I really have no doubt that he's a top world-class striker, but I think it's a fair question.
It's funny when you mentioned Arsenal there, because I think in terms of profile, a productive Lautaro would be a really, really good fit for Arsenal if the price was right and so on.
Yeah, completely.
All right, it's my little game. I did this on the FC show. Some people disagreed with me. It's your combined. I'm going to compare it to you, how yours compares with mine.
Okay.
You combine Manchester City, Inter 11. The one stipulation here is, obviously when we do this, it's always a formation, right? Inter play 3-5-2.
Yeah.
Manchester City, 3-4-2-1-4. Effectively 4-2-3-1, whatever. They have different variations. So I put mine in a 4-4-2 because it's the formation that God had in mind when he invented football.
But I
did it, I think, for the obvious reason that realistically, I think it's best suited to do this. So I'd like you to do the same exercise with the 4-4-2 so we don't get into weirdo arguments. And if you people are going to say, penalize the City, fine. Go ahead. So it's 4-4-2. Who's your goalkeeper? Is it Ederson or Onana?
So I see them in a very similar way because I think the distribution is something that set them apart from a lot of other goalkeepers, and they are so outstanding with the ball at their feet. I'm tempted to play Onana because he speaks French, and I know this is very biased. I know I love Ederson. I really think they're having quite a similar season. You know, maybe Onana because I've seen him being very decisive in some games, including the Brahim Diaz save in the semi-final second leg against Milan, for example, which Ederson never had to do in his semi-final second leg against Real Madrid, for example. So maybe Onana, but just about. But please, don't.
No, I'm sure they will. I'm with you. I don't think Ederson's had a great season. I don't know that Ederson is quite on so many metrics. If you look at analytics, Ederson is down this year. So for that reason, I picked Onana as well.
Okay.
Now the back four. Yeah. Let's do this as a unit.
Yeah.
So give me your four players in the back four.
I think I will go Walker, Diaz, Bastoni, Di Marco.
Ooh, Walker, Diaz, Bastoni, Di Marco.
Bastoni, as you know, I'm a big, big, big fan. I still remember seeing him against Liverpool last season live and being pitch side, because I was doing the commentary for French television from behind the goal, and I saw him all the time. He was there so close to me in the first half. He was amazing. Love him, Ruben Diaz, one of the best in the world. I love Kyle Walker for the pace and for what he brings to a team. And then the absence of left-back, pure left-back for City means that I could have put Ake there, of course, but I like my left-back and my right-back to be proper. I don't want a centre-back to play there, really. So I'll go for Di Marco.
Interesting. So I had three of those same four. The difference is I did not have Di Marco. I had Bastoni playing left-back. Look, it's Pep is 50%. Pep represents 50% of the managers in the Champions League final. He likes to put a center back at left back. In terms of who strikes the ball better, Bastoni or any other left back that we had a conversation?
Di Marco is an amazing crosser of the ball.
So is Bastoni.
But
Bastoni is taller. Bastoni
Di Marco
doesn't dye his hair in a stupid way.
More pace to go up and down his left hand side.
Di Marco having more pace.
Okay, whatever.
But I had Stones in there anyway with Ruben Diaz and Kyle Walker. So interesting. You already have three interplayers. I'm curious to see where this goes in midfield. All right, who are your two central midfielders?
So Rodri is one. And I will put John Stones there. That's why also he's not in my back four. Because I think John Stones, also, my back four becomes a back three with Stones, Bastoni, Diaz. And I push Walker and Di Marco really high.
You're taking some tactical liberties, but that's okay.
I'm allowed.
I would have gone Rodri and Kevin De Bruyne, because I think Kevin De Bruyne
is a pretty good... Kevin De Bruyne there.
Why?
No, it's I 4-4-2. Mean, Gundogan, I give you that. Bernardo, I would not even allow it. I can't have Kevin De Bruyne playing next to Rodri in a 4-4.
Why not? It's a diamond.
Oh, no, my God.
All right. Your wide players?
Grealish and Bernardo Silva. There's not even a debate.
Yeah, I went with the same guys. You'll be pleased to
know. Yeah, but because you put KDB, you cheated. Because you put KDB so deep. So now my KDB will be up front with Haaland as a kind of a 1-1 if you want. As much as I would love Lautaro.
4-4-2, which means two strikers. And that's why I went with Haaland. And Lautaro up front. But it's interesting, though. We both have... So basically, you have all your... We both have three interplayers in there. Two of them are the same, Onana and Bastoni. All of yours are defensive players.
Yeah, I know.
You know what? I think that's actually par for the course. Respect.
Yeah.
Before we go, I feel like we need to say something about Fiorentina because they're in a Conference League final against West Ham. They had a rough start to the season. Obviously, they have a very in-your-face owner in Rocco Commisso and Uncle Joe Barone running the club. I think the way they've moved on from Vlahovic this season, the football they've played, it hasn't always translated into results in Serie A. It took them a while to get going, but they've played really attractive football. They're doing things the right way. They showed a lot of courage in hiring a coach like Italiano, who is one of the most attacking-minded coaches out there. They understand the whole entertainment side of it. And look, they went with Jovic and Cabral, and it took them forever to get going, and Jovic is still frustrating.
Yeah.
But in the end, this is a good side. They have some really good individuals. Nico Gonzalez, obviously, who opened the scoring for Fiorentina.
Yeah. Yeah, I like them a lot, Gab. I'm like you. I mean, Amrabat. We don't have to name them all. Jonathan Ikoné, of course, plays for them. Slow start for him as well after his move. But Bernat really playing well collectively, individually. Italiano doing an amazing job, where there was a time where we thought he might have been even signed because they were like second half of the table in Serie A, but they've had an incredible second half of the season, really. And I think there will be a danger, there will be dangerous for West Ham. For the West Ham fans who are listening, who don't really know much about Fiorentina, they're very good individually and collectively. They're not perfect, as we saw in the final against Inter. They can be a bit naive at times. I think the lack of experience is there. But they are a really good team.
I mean, I think the script for this final is generally going to be based also on what David Moyes has shown us this year. It's going to be one-way traffic, Fiorentina with the ball, and West Ham punishing mistakes. We don't see West Ham trying to take the game to Fiorentina.
I would love it. I would love it too, because it would make for more of a more exciting game. Yeah, and I think it's been the problem with West Ham all season, and I think they had an identity crisis for most of it. But if you start playing against these Fiorentina sides, then you could have big, big troubles. I think it would be better for West Ham to like be
shut up, cautious
and play. Yeah, exactly.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Coppa Italia. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
The racist abuse suffered by Vinicius against Valencia continues to dominate the narrative, Jules, which I guess is a good thing.
Yeah.
Liga president Javier Tebas apologized for his comments in social media, sort of the meet after the game in which he responded to Vinicius' post, saying Vinicius had to educate himself on what La Liga were already doing before attacking the league. And it's exercise in tone deafness, I guess, Jules.
Yeah, I mean, I welcome the apologies, of course, on ESPN, by the way, from Javier Tebas.
Speaking to Gustavo Hoffman from ESPN Brazil.
Exactly, our friend Gustavo. But his comments were still unacceptable. And we said that on Monday, part of the problem for me is Javier Tebas. Now he's trying to defend himself for how he responded, for what he said, if people think that he's racist himself or not. We should not even be there. This should not be in the conversation. It's a good thing that he apologized and he did the right thing, but it was an obvious one to do. I mean, he could not have...
Not everybody would have apologized. Okay, I mean, you can't travel back in time and take it back. What I'm interested
I don't want
in
to
is,
give him too much credit for the apologies.
No,
because
I'm not giving him any credit.
Place was wrong.
I'm not giving him any credit. I think he can crawl, he can make his way out of the hole now by taking concrete steps to make sure this doesn't happen before. It just doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
I think that's important. You know, he's asked for more powers, which, again, I spoke to people at two different clubs. I said, well, the powers of clubs to ban their own fans are already there. So he doesn't necessarily need to do that.
No.
He needs to keep the conversation front and center. I'm interested in the situation being resolved. I'm not interested in burying or crucifying. We buried him for his stupid comments.
Yeah.
He apologized. Whether he really believes that he was wrong, whether he's changed his mind, I don't care what's
Tom
in his head.
Though.
No, but I really don't care. I care that he apologizes to the statement, and then I care about what he does next, and it's critical that he does the right thing.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Gara Valencia have been fined €45,000, and the Mario Kempes 10 will be closed for 5 matches as a result of the racial abuse. The club feel it's unfair, though, and they are being singled out. What is your take?
Jules, this is one of those more than one thing can be true situations.
Yeah.
I think this is pretty much unprecedented.
Yeah.
You know, 5 matches, closing that stand, which is where... I don't think that's where all the racist abuse came from, but it's where some of the racist abuse came from. And I made this point before. I think you need to act on individuals and you need to act on collectives, right? So those people who were racially abused and who we pointed on the crowd, they were detained and arrested. It's right to do that. You cannot go and detain and arrest an entire stand. The reason people take these sorts of punishments in shutting down entire stands is that they want to create a collective responsibility, right? So that you're there, you're a Valencia fan, you don't care one way or the other about Vinicius. So if the guy next to you starts racially abusing him, you might shut up. But if you know that him racially abusing him might mean that you get hit and your stand is closed, you might tell him, hey, cut it out.
Yeah.
Or you might signal to the steward, hey, this guy's being a Muppet.
Yeah.
Get him out of here, right? That's the idea behind these closures. Valencia's saying, well, wait a minute, when this happened elsewhere, you didn't go and close stands for 5 games. But the thing is, I think if you're La Liga, you can say before is before, now
exactly.
is now. I don't have an issue with it. People will point to the fine and say, oh, it's a pittance, you know, but like fines for football clubs always seem small. I don't think it's the fine to the football club that really matters. Mm. They're going to lose revenue from having that stand closed for 5 games. I'm okay with it. Collective punishments are unfair because they're unfair to the people in the stands. That's one way to look at it. But you look at it saying, you guys have to be responsible for the people around you as well.
Yeah, but for me, they should have done that a long time ago in the other stadiums where Vinny was racially abused as well. But you have
to start
somewhere.
You can't find the individual, definitely, yeah.
You have to start somewhere. So you start now and you identify the guys who made the racial abuse, you also ban them, but you have to go strong because this has to stop. And unless you go strong on them, and unfortunately, it's Valencia this time, but hopefully this will make the other things, like you said, and it's not going to happen again.
No, I agree with you. One other point, too, about this whole, like, society, blah, blah, blah. The only people, you know, Tebas talked about how they passed on documentation of the racist incidents. To this day, so there were 9 incidents this year, 8 of them concerned Vinicius, 1 of them concerned Iñaki Williams.
Yeah.
Are we to believe that those two are the only two people in the entire Liga who were racially abused this season? Do you believe that?
I don't think so. No.
What I would love to see, hint to anybody out there listening, call up the 20 clubs privately, confidentially, and say, hey, did any of your players of color, did any of them feel racially abused this season? I'm pretty sure it's going to be more than 2.
I think so too.
On the pitch, Real Madrid beat Rayo 2-1, and your boy Benzema got on the score sheet.
It's a dead rubber.
Dead rubber. Yeah. Anything you learned?
You know what, Gab? I mean, I watched that game not for the football, but unfortunately, or fortunately again, for what was around there. I love the fact that the players were all wearing the Vinicius shirt on. He was there not playing because he could have played because his red card obviously has been rescinded, but he has a bad knee, so he didn't play. But he was there, he was sat in the stand with Florentino Perez, he was on the pitch before the game as well. I think the support, he really loved the support from the whole stadium, which, you know, is to be expected, of course. And the players, I like the Rodrigo celebration for the winning goal right at the end of the game with the
clenched fist salute.
Exactly.
Channeling his inner Mexico City 1968.
Exactly. And that's why I love the rest. I mean, come on.
Right.
And back to Sunday's game, Gabby, now, because the video assistant referee, so the VAR referee in that match, Ignacio Iglesias Villanueva, has been suspended by La Liga and won't officiate again this season. It's down to the images that he showed the referee of the game, Ricardo de Burgos Bengoechea, that led to Vinicius being sent off after his clash with Hugo Duro. So basically, it seemed that he showed only the moment where Vinicius was hitting back at Duro, but not when Hugo Duro was like...
He had him in a headlock.
Weird.
It's weird. I don't... People are linking this to the racism. I don't know that applies. It should be relevant. Shows you how important it is to have competent VARs who can make the right decisions, so the referee can only act on the pictures that he was shown. To me personally, I think they should have both been sent off.
Yeah, completely.
Rescinding Vinicius's red card, to me, does what he did was still, in my opinion, still a red card of offense. The fact that the other guy should have been sent off too. But I guess since you can't go back and and suspend Hugo Duro, apparently, you can go and do the, you have to rescind Vinicius's card to make it all equal. Whatever. I hope this leads to people being more grown up and more understanding of how VAR is supposed to work. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, time for some more quick hits.
Yes,
Brighton and Manchester City battle to a 1-1 draw at the Amex, which means the Seagulls will fly into the Europa League next year, which we kind of knew there was going to be anyway. They were going to do it anyway unless they lost by like 9 goals to Villa on the last day of the season. But anyway, this is a fun open game and a great goal from Enciso.
Yeah, amazing goal from Julio Enciso, only 19 years of age. What a player he looks like he's going to become. Amazing game. It's not often, and we said that, especially towards the end of the season where City have been so good. And even if Pep made a lot of changes and
he
rotation,
brought the A-team back up front, it was just at the back.
But still,
got a bit funny
to have Brighton with more XG or better XG, more touches in the opposition box than City had in the Brighton box, and more shots on target, more everything that you want, was very, very impressive. And of course, City could have scored more. Brighton could have scored more. In the end, maybe that the draw is fairish. But I thought it was a great game, really. And I think
it was a meaningless game, but it was a great game.
It was a great game.
It was fun to watch.
Yeah. Really, really fun to watch. Sticking with City, this is what Guardiola said about the Premier League investigation into the club. What I would like is if the Premier League and the judges could make the judgment as soon as possible. Then if we've done something wrong, everybody will know it. And if we are, like we believe as a club for many years, in the right way, then the people will stop talking about that. We would love for it to happen tomorrow. No, this afternoon would be even better. It's pretty obvious that everybody wants to know the outcome as soon as possible.
Right, but then the obvious thing is, why don't you get on the phone to your boss and say, hey, tell the lawyers to stop delaying, just to cooperate. I mean, this is the same thing, right? Obviously, they want to have a judgment. Look, there's a reality for Pep Guardiola where he just wants to get this over with. It's also because most of the charges, you know, incidentally, of these charges anyway, deal with before he came. So he's not really touched or affected by the charges.
True.
But if you're Manchester City, you're going to fight your court. You're not going to trust the system. You're going to use everything you can. I mean, there's, you know, the alleged email from Khaldun back in the day before the UEFA investigation where he said, you know, I'd rather spend 30 million a year on lawyers for 10 years. And that's why they've filed legal challenges. Even in 2021, the High Court said that they need to cooperate. They need to,
not providing the documents or the information.
I don't fault Manchester City for doing that, for defending themselves and using the legal system to defend themselves. They have every right to do that. But then, Pep, don't give me this, this makes it seem like it's the Premier League's fault. No, it's not the Premier League's fault that it's taking time. They're not the ones who are asking people to recuse themselves and filing whatever legal challenges they can. Barcelona lose to Valladolid 3-1 as Xavi mixes up the squad and Kyle Larin shines.
Yeah.
Second best Canadian striker in the world.
Of course.
Jules, at this stage of the season, teams that need points, like Valladolid, usually get them against teams that don't need them, like Barcelona.
Yeah, and our friend Eric Garcia started for Barcelona. So, hey, guess what happened? They lost because he's not good.
And he played the guy on the side for one of the goals.
But he was more there's a crazy start, really. There's nothing,
there's nothing to talk about in this game.
But except that the fact that Barca have conceded now more games in the last that Barca have conceded more goals in the last five games than they had in the previous 31 or 32 in the season, which is incredible.
Which also shows you that nobody really cares about poor Marc-Andre Ter Stegen and his clean sheet record and whatever.
I felt for him a little bit. Juventus had a horrible Monday. Moments before their kickoff against the kickoff in the Empoli game, they found that the 10-pound penalty was reinstated and that they went out and lost to Empoli as well in a really, really bad way. They're back to seventh place now, Gab, 5 points back of the top four, and they face Milan on Sunday. So they can still do it if they win their remaining two games, including the Milan one, and hoping for the other results to go their way. They can still clinch top four.
They can clinch top four. The other problem is, of course, is the parallel investigation and the bonuses. That'll come back to haunt them at some way. There's Unisquare thought that says they're better off that they don't get into Europe, because otherwise UEFA will have to investigate them for financial fair play. It's a bad situation. I think we knew the penalty was going to be there, because remember, when the points were reinstated, they basically sent it back to this court and saying, look, we agree with your logic in finding them guilty, but you need to explain how you arrived at 10 points. So they reviewed it, and that's why they came up with a 10-point situation. I think if you're Juve, you want clarity. You want all this to be over so you can know how you can rebuild and get out of the hole that you're in. Bukayo Saka has extended his deal with Arsenal and will earn around 12 million euros a season, or 200 grand a week. Jules, it's important that they got this done. Equally important is locking down William Saliba and Martin Odegaard, who become free agents in 2024 and 2025, respectively.
Yeah, that's right. You've done Saka, Ramsdale, Martinelli. Now it's turn of Saliba and Odegaard, and the discussions are continuing. It's good. You want them for the longer term. You don't want to be in a position where you risk losing them, and especially for little money. And they are very important players to the squad. So, like,
get this done now.
Yeah, exactly. Back to that Juve points penalty, Gabby. First, they got a 15 points penalty, and that was taken away. Now reinstated as a 10-point penalty. Jose Mourinho isn't happy about it, but neither are other clubs.
Yes, and Jose Mourinho is right on this occasion, as are the other clubs. His point is, look, if we knew that they were going to get the 10-point penalty back, then I would have approached these games, some of these games, in a different way. I wouldn't have put all my eggs into the Europa League basket, and maybe we would have had more points and we'd be in the Champions League spots. My answer to that would be, it's true, it's unfortunate, but you know, sometimes this is the price you pay for having as fair a process as you can have towards Juve. They had a right to their appeals. The courts operated a certain way because they did. And I also feel that, you know, maybe to some degree you're also deflecting a little bit, because not that Mourinho would ever do that, because frankly, everybody knew that they were going to get some level of point. It's not like the higher court says, oh no, this is unfair, get rid of it. They were going to get some kind of point penalty reinstated. Bloomberg report that Todd Boehly will step back from his day-to-day role at Chelsea. They say it's been taking up 50% of his time. He wants it to take up only 20% of his time. Good move. Does this mean Chelsea are going to be 30% better?
What about 0% of your time, Todd? Maybe that would be great. Maybe you should have never had any sort of involvement into the way the club is functioning day in and day out.
Just hire a guy, which is apparently what he's about to do. Hire a guy to do it. If you don't like the way he does it, get rid of him.
Exactly. But please, don't get involved anymore. I mean, it makes a laugh. We've got plenty of great stories to tell our friends and our listeners and our viewers about you, but you haven't done great. So, you know, it's time to move on, I think. The 36 Bundesliga 1 and 2 clubs have rejected a league proposal, Gab, to secure a $2.2 billion investment from a private equity firm, as we saw in France, for example, or in Spain, in exchange of 12.5% of broadcasting revenue over the next 20 years. What did you make of that?
So they needed a two-thirds majority of 36 clubs. 20 actually voted in favor. 11 voted no. 5 of them abstained. Why you would abstain on this, I have no idea. I think this goes to show that the Bundesliga has its own model, its own way of doing things, and they don't want to go corporate.
Well, some do. Clearly.
Some do, but overall, I think this was all very much a reaction to the fans. I mean, the people who voted against did so, you know, not because they don't want extra money now, but because the fans worry that having these people involved will somehow minimize their votes. There's different models out there. I love the fact that there's different models. I love the fact that there's one model in England, and then in Spain a little different, in France a little different. We're not all the same. The problem comes when you're asked to compete at European level. But I think the vast majority of Bundesliga fans, they say, no, my club my league, this is what's important to me. I want my voice to continue to be heard. And you know what? There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Most fan-friendly league in Europe.
Yeah.
This was way back on Monday in another formality, but Newcastle and Leicester City battled to a 0-0 draw. Sorry, formality for Newcastle, not so much for Leicester.
Yeah.
This means Atun back in the Champions League for the first time in many, many years. Jules, they're only the second club from outside the Big Six to qualify for the Champions League since 2005.
Right.
So maybe now it's a Big Seven?
I think it looks like it, Gabby, for sure. If they can sustain this, of course, and build on this season. They were 11th last season. It's an amazing achievement for them to finish third. Well done to Eddie Howe.
We don't know yet if they're third.
No, but like...
finish top four.
Yeah, yeah. Top
Sorry,
four.
I just don't want to get the United fans
angry. No. But like, you know, third or fourth, even that. Many have Eddie Howe as the manager of the season, which I can completely understand. They should have won that game. They had plenty of chances, hit the woodwork so many times. But hey, they were still very happy with the draw. First time back in the Champions League for 20 years. So it's a great achievement for them. So well done. Well done to Newcastle, Eddie Howe and everybody involved at the club. Borussia Dortmund have a chance to be crowned champions on Saturday if they equal or better Bayern Munich's result. Jude Bellingham is back in training, which is huge. He missed the last game, of course, at the weekend. But Gab, are you surprised that sporting director Sebastian Kehl says that the club have not yet received any offers for Bellingham?
No, I'm not surprised at all, because I think he knows full well that the way these things work is they work out the deal with Bellingham and Bellingham's people first.
Yeah.
And then Bellingham says, I want to leave. And, you know, it makes no sense to go and try to negotiate with Borussia Dortmund
Definitely
first. Now, in back in the day, formerly, it was like, oh, you're tampering with a player, or, you know, you need to ask the club for permission to speak to the players. In the real world, that's not how it works. So I'm not surprised. The suggestion that Bellingham has some sort of unofficial understanding, there's an unofficial price, which Borussia may or may not be true. I think Dortmund also know that, you know, you have to have some understanding, and they already have a number in mind. I think the buying clubs have a number in mind as well. Atletico Madrid go 3-0 up against Espanyol, but then fall apart in the second half, and it finishes 3-3, keeping Espanyol's hopes of avoiding relegation alive.
Yeah,
Jules.
Just about with the two games to go for Espanyol in La Liga. They're 3 points behind, I think. 3 points back, they could have done with winning it, but to be fair, when they were 3-0 down and Atleti were in control, complete control of the game, it looked more like they could lose 5 or 6-0 than going back to 3-3. They came back. They even had the goal that was rightly disallowed for offsides. It was a great to watch. It was an amazing end. The atmosphere in the stadium was fantastic. Well done to them for batting out. I mean, I'm not really sure what Simeone made of that.
I don't think he was happy.
But you know, from the players' point of view, man, they stopped playing completely.
You know the discussion we've had on and off about who finishes second, it isn't important.
Yeah.
I think you and Simeone are genuinely the only people who care who finishes second.
I'm happy that, you know, I'm on the same line as El Cholo, that's for sure. And sticking with that game, Gab, there's no goal line technology, of course. And from the picture that we saw in the game, it's not obvious that the Antoine Griezmann goal, the second one for Atletico Madrid, should have stood.
So people are getting kind of bent out of shape about this. And look, I think it's right that they do, because, you know, Espanyol would have had two extra points at the end of this, and they could get relegated by a point or 2 points or whatever. That said, those are the rules, right? They don't use the goal line technology. They use the VAR cameras to decide
to
if they make a mistake. But let's not forget, this is the way football worked until 4 or 5 years ago. There's also an assistant referee who makes those decisions.
Yeah.
I don't know that goal line technology costs so much money that you can't go and implement it. I know the technology keeps getting more sophisticated and more advanced. In the Coppa Italia final, they used a special ball like with a chip in it where they could determine if the ball went out of play and whatever. Seems OTT, but maybe we'll all take it for granted in a few years.
Maybe.
It is interesting, though, with the goal line tech, because, like I said, this could have far-reaching implications for Espanyol and for, I think it's Cadiz and Valladolid, the other teams that are still at risk of going down. ESPN and others are reporting that Arne Slot will turn down the chance to join Spurs. Jules, one of our colleagues, says that this is summer of 2021 vibes, when they pursued everyone from Gattuso to Fonseca before settling on Nuno Espirito Santo. That worked out great.
Yeah,
we saw that. Your thoughts?
I mean, I would have loved to see Arne Slot there. I think he's doing an amazing job at Feyenoord. I think he says a lot that he doesn't want to go to Spurs and want to stay at Feyenoord. Next season, playing the Champions League, of course, which Spurs can't offer.
Did he say he wants to stay at Feyenoord, or did he just say he doesn't want to go to Spurs?
No, he said that he wants to stay at Feyenoord. Which again, there's Champions League against no Champions League, or maybe not Europe at all. I can understand that for Spurs. Again, this should not happen two summers in a row. You should have a plan. And it looks like right now they don't have a plan. They go for different managers who have different profile.
Yeah.
Whoever is the next one on the list, okay, Nagelsmann and Pochettino and Arne Slot, and then what, Postecoglou or Potter or Rodgers or Mason. And
it's Lopetegui.
Lopetegui. Hey. You know what about Nuno? He's free. Nuno, again, if you fancy him, bring him back to the club.
So I think Arne Slot would have been a great appointment for them. I also love the fact that Arne Slot says, you know what, I'm backing myself. Because let's face it, right? Feyenoord are historically, financially, the third force in Holland.
Yeah.
And you know that next season, Ajax aren't going to be, you know, the car crash that they were this year. They're going to be back and they're going to be stronger.
For sure.
PSV Eindhoven, Ruud van Nistelrooy moving on.
Yeah.
Presumably they'll come back, right? So it's difficult to go and have another season. It's difficult to remain kind of flavor of the month. But the man's 44 years old, so he figures he's got a bunch of years left. Maybe he even says, you know, I've done this twice in a row in difficult situations. Let's not forget, he rebuilt that Feyenoord team.
They sold all his players.
Four or five of his
top players.
Which
they might do again this summer, by the way.
Might happen again. If he can prove himself again, he comes at it from a stronger position.
Yeah, true.
From Spurs, I think the single biggest indictment, look, we're only going by what we read in the papers and the bookies' favorites and whatever. Nagelsmann, Luis Enrique, great managers. Totally different profiles.
Yeah, completely.
I think
that's why
it's
a mess.
You need to start with the director of football and a footballing vision.
Remember that guy, Roman Abramovich, Gav? Well, when sanctions for the Russia-Ukraine conflict forced him to sell Chelsea for $2.5 billion to Todd Boehly and his mates, he promised to give the funds to a foundation for the victims of the war. And according to the Times, the money is still sitting in his account.
I find this extraordinary.
Come on.
But it's not Abramovich's fault.
Yeah.
It's 1 year. There's a story in the Times by Martin Ziegler that explains the whole thing. This money has been sitting in his Abramovich's company. It's called Fordstam. It's been sitting in his account. I don't even want to, I'm sure I could calculate how much interest that $2.5 billion earned in 1 year of just sitting there this account. The government hired a guy from UNICEF to run this foundation. They had to jump through all sorts of legal hoops and whatever else. Now they're saying, oh, finally, hopefully next week, we can get the money across to the foundation. But think of the waste. Think of this money's going to go to good to a good purpose, right? To help rebuild Ukraine, to provide assistance to people who have been displaced, refugees, and so on. Think of the absolute waste. The guy said, look, you know, we've had three different governments here in the UK, three different prime ministers. It's been slow going. And this is, you know, my feelings on lawyers and the law and legal proceedings.
I do.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. When you wrote the freaking rules, when you forced this man to sell his club, rightly so, with the sanctions, whatever, you could have put in whatever the rules were to make sure that this money went to a good cause quickly when it was most needed.
Yeah.
And instead, you couldn't do it because you were messing around with stupid political nonsense. I don't know what to say. I just hope eventually it's put to good use. England have announced their squad for the upcoming internationals. There's no Raheem Sterling.
No.
I suspect you'd rather talk about Harry Maguire because he is there.
He's not in the list, is he? Is he in the list?
George, he's the England captain. Are you surprised?
How is Harry Maguire still capped by Gareth Southgate? I mean, I think it tells a lot about Gareth Southgate, and you know how much, how very little... what's the words?
Okay, just
believe,
faith
in having Gareth Southgate.
Put it nicely.
Gareth Southgate is not
a
good,
far better person than he is a football manager.
Exactly,
and he's a very good person.
He's a good person. I don't rate him as a football manager, as you all know it by now. That Sterling is not in the squad, it makes completely sense. That Eberechi Eze, for example, is in the squad. I like that. I like the idea and the thinking. Luis Dunk, the same. Really good season with Brighton. I think De Zerbi took Dunk, who's 31, by the way. So he might not be at the Euros. He might not, but at least now, certainly now, he deserves that call-up because he's been one of the best centre-backs in the league. What is Harry Maguire doing in that list? Why? What's the? You can't keep telling people, haven't picked Sterling, haven't picked Mount, haven't picked so-and-so because they don't play enough for their clubs, and yet called Harry Maguire, who never plays, and when he plays away at Sevilla, it's a disaster.
So he's the England captain. That's why he's there. I have a slightly different view on this, which is simply that realistically, you know, you're playing, is it North Macedonia and somebody
Malta.
Else, right? And Malta, right? So you're not going to be stretched. This is an opportunity for you to assess the players you have and assess guys who could be part of it in the future.
So take Maguire, just say to him, listen, have a rest. It's June. Go on holidays.
He's well rested. He hasn't played.
Will. I'm going to call Dunk. I'm going to call, I don't know, Konsa, whoever he wants. But come on.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm 100% with you on Levi Colwill. I could see that. I could also see, to be honest, if you want to give, I think different players need to be handled differently psychologically, right? So I don't think we can think of the England teams. We should not think of the England team as a reward for good performances, right? So that's why Lewis Dunk, if you want to reward him, no, it's not about a reward. It's about building a squad and keeping a squad.
Yeah, but it's never about rewards. You pick the best players of your country. Lewis Dunk right now is one of the best.
You pick the players who are going to be, who are going to make up the best possible team at the Euros in 2024. So if you think Lewis Dunk is a shot at doing that, it's not like he's going to be 50 years old in 2024.
No.
Fine, right? But with Maguire, you know, you figure he's certainly well rested because he hasn't played much, and you still believe that he can turn it around. I'm okay with that.
No, I'm not. I'm really not. Jordi Alba will leave Barcelona this summer as a free agent, giving up the final year of his contract. Gav is 34 and lost his starting place to Alejandro Balde this season in the team, but he had a glittering career.
Yeah, and I think actually he still has something to give in a different role, not to Barcelona, obviously. It's interesting. He forgot the last year of his contract. So did Sergio Busquets. What I did not read, maybe you did, and correct me if I'm wrong, did these people give up money? Or did they?
I think in this case,
or did they take a payout?
And in the Busquets case, I believe that it's true that they
just walked away and said, "Oh, I don't want the. It's not like I'll take part of it to leave now."
No,
okay,
yeah,
that's a credit to them.
If that's the case, it would be. Yeah,
people forgive. People sometimes forget how good Jordi Alba was for so long and that great Barcelona team.
Yeah.
The understanding with Messi, his crosses. He lost his place because Xavi took Barcelona in a different direction where they played a different sort of football. And that sort of left.
And he's 34. I mean,
doesn't work. At 34, it's not going to work. I think even when he was younger, it wouldn't have come natural for him. Jordi Alba is a converted winger. Let's not forget. But I think in the right team, maybe a team that pays a back three, if he's fit, the quality can make all the difference. I think he still has something to give.
Mm.
Mason Mount is 12 months away from free agency, and there's no progress in talks with Chelsea. Manchester United, Liverpool, and Arsenal are all supposedly sitting there, waiting to pounce.
Ready.
Chelsea, we're told, have put a number on him.
Yeah.
How do you see it, Jules?
I mean, clearly he's not going to extend his contract there. I mean, I don't think that...
You're 100% certain it's not going to happen.
The last time they spoke was in February.
What if the new manager says, I want Mason Mount?
I know, but...
The new manager who is...
Mauricio Pochettino.
Who hasn't signed yet, yeah?
New manager? You still don't believe will be the next manager.
I just don't understand. Can you tell me why he hasn't signed yet? Or why they haven't announced the signing?
Maybe he's on holidays somewhere where he can't receive his emails and do a sign-in thing.
Somebody told me on social media... They haven't announced that he signed because they don't want to undermine Frank Lampard's job.
Ooh.
And make his... exactly. Whatever.
I'm a big fan of Mason Mount, and so are you, Gabby. I know that. I think if you're United, Liverpool, Arsenal, and you can smell the bargain there, you...
What is the right price for Mason Mount?
The right price with a player like him is £50 million. This is the price that you would pay for Gabriel Jesus with a year left on the contract, for Raheem Sterling, more or less. They're between 45, 55, like in that kind of bracket. Chelsea right now asking for £70 million. 7-0. For someone who's just 1 year left on his contract, it's ridiculous. I think it's not helping his case. And whether you think that, you know, Chelsea should make it easy to sell him for everything that is given to the club or not, but But 70 is ridiculous, I think. You know?
No, I think 70 is completely out of line, especially given the season he's had and given the fact that he has the leverage to become a free agent in a year's time.
Powerful position.
I think they're counting on the fact that because he came through the ranks at Chelsea, because he's very attached to the club, that you know he's not going to run his contract down. I wouldn't take that for granted at all. He's changed agents. He's tried different opportunities. I think if somebody rocks up, given Chelsea's financial situation, even with $40
million, they need to sell, yeah.
I think you have to let him go relative to losing out for nothing. And I think it would be a shame because I know Nkunku's come in. I know like there's still people thinking they're going to sign Joao Felix. You're talking attacking midfielders. We've been through Chelsea, right?
Yeah.
Can you tell me right now, who are Chelsea's central attacking midfielders? Conor Gallagher has been playing in that position.
I know.
Well, with all the love in the world for Conor Gallagher.
Yeah.
He's not Mason Mount.
But you can always play Sterling central, Ziyech central, Pulisic central if you want.
Pulisic has got a year left on his contract. Joao Felix is not a Chelsea player.
Ziyech you tried to sell.
I mean,
but it makes no sense for Chelsea not to keep Mason Mount. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand unless he really wanted too much money. Which again, I'm sure you could find an agreement somewhere.
There's ways around it.
Surely. The Guardian reports that Manchester United are preparing a bit for Harry Kane. Guys, is this a good idea?
If you get, again, this, there are no bad assets. There are only incorrectly priced assets.
Yeah.
If you get Harry Kane at the right price, I think Harry Kane's got many years left. I mean, not many, like 10, but many, like a good 3 or 4. I think he can give the club a real lift. Yeah. I think his intelligence, his football intelligence on the pitch, I think it would be a really good match for what Erik ten Hag wants. Would I spend $100 million for Harry Kane? No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't spend $100 million on Anthony either. So that's where you get into the number. What is the right number for Harry Kane? But yeah, by all means, they should be tracking him. And again, from Kane, as you know, I'm not one of those people who says, you have to move on to win medals. Because if you wanted to move on to win medals, I'm not sure you'd be going to Manchester United.
I'm kidding.
Manchester United won something this season, didn't they?
Yeah, the Carabao Cup, so he would have won that.
And they could win the FA Cup, too, I'm told. There you go.
Exactly.
ESPN are reporting that Qatar Sports Investments, the folks who own Paris Saint-Germain, are considering a bid for a controlling stake in Santos, who, of course, is the club of Pelé.
Yes, and Neymar.
Are you buying this?
Yes, of course, Gab. They want to get into this multiple club ownership.
they've only realized it's a thing now.
It's a thing now. So they have, I think, 25% of Braga, for example, in Portugal. Yeah. They want to go a bit further with Santos. I think Neymar's father is also involved in the negotiation,
really?
Of course. Neymar starting his career, as we all know, at Santos. So I can see this one happen. They wanted a South American club. They've wanted one for quite a while. They've looked also a bit in England, a bit of Spain. I think Malaga is a club that they're talking to. So little by little, they're making it. You know me. I mean, you know more than me about having multiple clubs in your stable, really. I don't really see the benefit of it. You know, you can be like the RB Group, of course, or you can be like the City Group.
Nobody has benefited from it other than RB. And other those situations where it's like only two clubs, like Brighton and Union right? But it's a great idea. Let's pool our scouting resources. Let's pool our commercial resources. Pool our medical resources. Nobody has been able, and City haven't been able to make it work either. Mm. Certainly not in terms of bringing people through. How many people go from Yokohama Marinas to Melbourne City to New York, you know, other than Tati Castellanos, for example. But that was because they couldn't find enough. Nobody would buy him.
Right? Exactly.
So it's a nice idea. It's hard to actually pull off. And I don't have much faith in QSI. And you know my thoughts. I think they're going to put a big for sale sign on Paris Saint-Germain very soon.
Yeah, you said that for one now.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Andrea Pirlo has been sacked by Fatih Karagümrük in Turkey with three games to go. I mean, Gab, will we see him again soon?
Yeah, Fatih Karagümrük.
Sack someone with just three games to go when they've got nothing to play for anymore.
Yeah, and they finished ninth in the table, which I think is pretty much where they were expected to finish.
I think so.
Fatih Karagümrük is a club. It's a football club. It's not a person, by the way, for those who are wondering. No, because Fatih is a,
yeah,
it's a,
name
it's a common Turkish
name,
right?
True.
It's kind of like, you know, I don't know, George
Vlogs
FC.
Nothing to do with
Ansu
either. But,
I think so. I think there's a really good manager in there. I don't think you can... I think the Juve job may be too soon, whatever. I mean, look at it in practical terms and results. They were not a disaster in difficult situations. I hope you learned something. I think the reason you go to challenge yourself in another league is to grow as a person.
Yeah.
Credit for him for doing that. Yeah, I want to see him back, and I want to see him, if he wants to keep managing, I'm curious to see what he can do. Will Still plans to be back at Stade Reims next season. Jules, I think there was more than one Premier League club sniffing around the ginger Anglo-Belgian enfant prodige.
That's right, Gabi. And I like the fact that he wanted to stay another season at Reims and keep the learning process. He's going to do his, you know, full badges, because remember, he was obviously didn't have all the badges. So it was costing his club £22,000 for every game that he was managing for them. So that would be done. So they won't have to pay anything anymore. And also, I think he will keep learning and improving as a head coach. I don't think he was ready now for the Premier League anyway, whoever that was, or even in the Championship. Like, let's say Southampton, someone told me that they were quite keen at some point. I don't think he was ready yet. I think he could very much do with one other season. He's still very, very young. Let's not forget, 30 years old. So give him time. He will come at some point. He will come home, wherever home is for him. I don't know, where he feels like he belongs the most. But there's no doubt that there's so much talent that eventually he will come to the Premier League. But I think now would have been too early, too soon.
I'm curious just on this issue, because we know, well, Chelsea has appeared to have appointed a manager. Spurs need a manager. Paris Saint-Germain, I'm assuming, will be looking to appoint somebody to replace Christophe Galtier.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, why are there no murmurings about this?
No, there is a lot. What about in the PSG job?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there are a lot. They're discussing a lot internally.
Yeah, but have they actually spoken to anybody?
Yeah, I think...
What names have come out?
Thiago Motta, Marcelo Gallardo.
Gallardo, who gets linked with Paris Saint-Germain every six months.
But he's,
Thiago Motta, who's a former Paris Saint-Germain player.
Yeah. Okay. Jose Mourinho, of course, because of the link with Luis Campos. And Jorge Mendes, who's very influential in this process, by the way. You know, I think there's a few... Abel Ferreira, for example, that they really, really like in Brazil, the Portuguese coach. Even Ruben Amorim, who I think was in contention when they chose the Marseille guy instead. So they're there. I think they're searching, let's wrap up the league, and then I think they will properly go for it.
All right, they're going to wrap up the league this weekend, right?
Away at Strasbourg, I'm really hoping so, please.
Because you don't want to be winning the league at home, because otherwise you'll just get booed.
And the last game of the season as well. That's amazing.
That'll be so embarrassing.
That's amazing. Newly installed US Soccer Federation Sporting Director Matt Crocker says that he hopes to have a permanent manager by the end of the summer, and that Anthony Hudson will be in charge until then. But it might take longer. Gav, I guess they would rather get it right than move too quickly.
So at first I thought, oh, look, here's a chance for me to make fun of them, because this is stupid, right? Like, well, you know, how long could it possibly take?
Yeah.
But then I thought, you know what? They're not playing any, you know, Gold Cup, whatever. But, like, with all due respect to the Gold Cup and its significance within CONCACAF, the more you leave Hudson in there, it's kind of like a win-win situation, a house money situation. Because if you do well, then it's good. If you do badly, then you can say, oh, we're testing new things, and don't worry, Hudson's just a caretaker. So maybe you do wait longer to try to get it right. I mean, I would hope.
Why can it take so long? I don't understand. Well, why? They're waiting for people to...
No, they had to go and... Well, first they had to go. They said, all right, we're going to appoint a sporting director. And it's a big deal, because they appointed a guy from outside the U.S. soccer family. First time they have somebody who, you know, didn't grow up at cookouts and barbecues and Reina household with Ernie Stewart and God knows who else. Crocker, of course, for those who don't know, he was at Southampton for many years. He was at the FA as well. Give this guy time. Give this guy time to speak to stakeholders. I'm okay. I'm actually okay with this. I went into this rashly saying like, oh, this is stupid. Why are they so rubbish, right? But then I thought, you know what? It doesn't really matter. World Cup is in 2026. Take your time. Get who you think is the best possible guy in. You know, it's not like Anthony Hudson's, you know, a Muppet either. You know, he can go. He can coach a team. Nobody really cares if you win the Gold Cup or not this summer. It's about development towards 2026, right?
Very true.
So, yeah, I'm all right with that. Andres Iniesta is leaving Vissel Kobe. He's not retiring. He's 39 years old. He just announced on Instagram that he's coming back to Barcelona. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but,
but he says he's not retiring.
No, he still has his house in Barcelona for sure. I respected massively the fact that he went to Japan, to be fair, to learn a different culture, to be there with his family. He did really well over there. Now 39, he still wants to play. Good on him. I mean, there's not many places now you can go, really.
Maybe the Kings League?
No, I think he still aims better than that. But maybe in Saudi Arabia, I don't know, maybe MLS. I still think that he could do a job in MLS maybe not consistently and playing the full season. But I would think that even at 40, almost 40 years old, he can still give something to a squad, to a team. But again, maybe not playing every minute of every game of the whole season. I mean, I wonder if he wants to play still, he must be in good shape, right? Fitness-wise, because otherwise he knows that he won't be able to last that long. So
I think with his style and at that age, being in good shape simply means being able to avoid injuries rather than, you know, going and sprinting and running around the pitch. Not that he did much of that before.
No, exactly. Anyway, he would play deeper anyway.
But no, I hope he sticks around so people can see him on YouTube highlight clips and whatnot, because he's a special player and it's an era. Equally, you know, he hasn't spoken out very much over the years. He's always been kind of certainly quieter than Xavi, for example. I'm really curious what his next move is.
Yeah, we'll see. But good luck to you, Andres, you know, if you're listening. An Argentina guard making the most of being the world champions.
Yeah, that's right. So basically, obviously, Argentina as a country in a very difficult economic position. But they won the World Cup, and so the AFA are taking advantage of the fact that there is no qualifying for the Copa America, so South American qualifying for the 2026 World Cup, which they won't have to do anyway, doesn't start for a while. So they're saying, let's go on tour.
And let's play some friendlies.
They sold their rights to a Chinese promoter. They're reportedly getting $8 million a game, which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money. And one of their first games is going to be against Australia, a rematch of their round of 16 game at the World Cup, where I was at, where they nearly threw it away at the end. Yeah, but
almost did, indeed.
Yeah, I think it's good promotional stuff. My one thing is that I hope doesn't happen is I hope the big guns show up for this game. I hope they're not like, oh, wait, do I want to fly to Australia to play? We'll see about that. Erik ten Hag was asked directly about Manchester United signing Neymar, and rather than knocking it down, he said, quote, when we have news for you, we will tell you.
Incredible.
Jules, is he being a tease and getting you all hot and excited for nothing?
Yeah, he's being a tease. There's really nothing into this.
They're not going to sign Neymar?
I mean, not certainly not under this owner, with this sporting director in place, with this manager. I mean, why would Ten Hag want Neymar? I don't know. And by the way, he plays where Marcus Rashford is playing, and playing really well. But yeah, they keep reporting that story. Maybe Monday night or Tuesday night, I can't remember exactly. Knocked down very, very quickly from everywhere.
Not from Ten Hag.
Not from Ten Hag. You know, from people above Ten Hag.
He's messing with Zahavi. You.
All right. Well, okay, Eric. Whatever you want. Mikhailo Mudryk has had a rough time, of course, since joining Chelsea on the pitch in January. But now he's getting criticism for one of his social media posts, Gab.
Yeah, so I sort of dove into this because I thought this is kind of weird. And
I missed it. Sorry.
So he's at the gym and he's filming an old man who's on a rowing machine with a personal trainer. And, you know, as can sometimes happen when you're working out at the gym and you do a squat or whatever, the guy's shorts go down and you see his butt crack, right?
Right.
And he thinks this is funny and he puts it out there. And, hey, it's extremely puerile. I am not going to lie. It's the kind of thing I would find funny.
Right.
But you're a public figure. You play for Chelsea Football Club. you're making fun of an old man and a butt crack. It's like making fun of, like, you know, a construction worker and a butt crack. Do better. He's getting absolutely killed. So, hang
on. Mikhailo Mudryk goes to a public gym.
What?
Why doesn't he go to the Chelsea gym? The
training maybe ground, he doesn't live near Cobham. I don't know who the dude is.
He's got a Virgin gym membership or David Lloyd or Pure Gym card with his name on it and his face.
I have a Virgin membership. Do not knock the Virgin gym.
No, I'm not knocking. I'm just saying, you're not Michael Mudryk, though.
I don't know. Maybe it's another gym. I don't know. Maybe this dude was at Chelsea. Although it's weird because the signage was all red. I don't know where the hell he was. But the point
that's
is,
amazing.
It's just a stupid thing to do.
It is a
stupid thing. Just leave it out.
Yeah.
Jules, this brings us to an end, but we got to come back on
Monday. Yeah.
Because we're going to have our Bundesliga champions. Yeah. Could be the old champions.
Yeah.
Could be the new champions.
Maybe a Liga champion as well. Who knows?
Yeah,
it could be.
Probably will.
And the last Premier League round of games as well of the season.
And we will find out the future of Leeds United. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.